Hello and welcome to the God Story Podcast. I'm Brent Siddle. Do you sit in church alone? Well, if you do, I have done certainly, then this podcast could be for you. I'm joined once again by Danielle Trewick, founding director of the Single Minded Ministry and an adjunct teacher at Moore Theological College in Sydney, Australia. Danielle also serves as both diocesan research officer and a member of the Archbishop's Doctrine Commission within the Anglican Doctrine Commission within the Anglican Diocese of Sydney. I love saying that. It's just great fun. She's the author of the IVP book, The Meaning of Singleness, and we talked to, Rito and I talked to Danny last year, I think it was, about this. Danny is with me this time to talk about a recent article she's just published, which caught my attention, called On Sitting in Church Alone. And I would have loved Rito to be here, but he's just come back from Australia. They've had a family emergency over there, so he can't be with us. But anyway, Danny, hi, welcome from Oz.
Hi, thanks. Good to be back with you guys, or with you, Guy, I should say, today.
There's only one of me, thank goodness. Now, Danny, this article, some people would say that's too many. This article arose from a question a podcast interviewer asked you about singleness. Now, what was the question, and what did you find yourself answering?
Well, I mean, you would know, having had me on your podcast, I have done quite a few podcasts since my book was published last year. And, you know, there's often the similar kind of questions come up. And then towards the end, the last one tends to be, okay, so what practical things can we do to help singles feel like they're loved and valued and members of church? And so I kind of rattle off a few. And one that is become a little bit of a hobby horse for me, as we shall see, is the question of, well, where do we sit in church? How does actually just where we sit reflect the fact that we're the family of God together? And I rattled off my normal kind of, you know, response to that. And what I also did on the spot, and I hadn't done this before, I don't think, was I said, and I'm really struggling with this, and I'm finding it harder and harder the older I get and the more I'm in church, rather than easier and easier. And no sooner had those words left my mouth than the podcast interviewer kind of said, why do you think that is? And I'm like, oh, gosh, okay.
Good question. Good question, yes.
And so I said something on the spot. I'm not even quite sure what I said, but I said something on the spot. But then I just found myself over the weeks following it just going, why? Why is that? What is going on for me that not just I kind of know the theoretical answer, but why, what is the personal thing going on for me, and why am I finding it harder and harder? So it's a bit of a soul searching, existential, you know, deep dive into my own psyche at that point that ensued. And then I thought, what better thing to do than to write an article and put that out for everybody else to see into my psyche? So
yeah,
that's
for sure.
How we ended up.
Absolutely, for sure. That's a mark of a good interviewer, that you're still thinking about the question weeks and months later. They've done their job, certainly. And I have to confess that I'd never consciously articulated all of this until I read your article. And yes, but I've been through it too. Why do you think that it's becoming increasingly difficult? Because you write, it's becoming increasingly difficult and sometimes even painful for you. Why do you think that is?
Well, I'd encourage people to go and read the article itself, because I go into a bit more detail there. One of the realities is I've actually just changed churches because I've moved to another part of Sydney. And so being a newcomer at any church, particularly when you're there by yourself, is just a very confronting experience. And you sort of walk in every week thinking, okay, how do I find someone that I know when I don't know many people here? Where do I sit? There's an anxiety about that for any person who's new in church, I think. But as I was being honest with myself, I realized that this isn't something I've just been feeling at my new church. Actually, I was probably feeling it even more deeply at my previous church, which I loved, and I knew so many people, and I was so embedded in the community there. I was like, what is, why? And particularly because I didn't remember this being a big thing for me kind of earlier in my adult life. And so there was a moment where it clicked for me that I realized, oh, okay, this is what's exacerbated the whole thing for me. It was, as I'm sure we're going to be saying for many years to come, it was COVID. It was those months, particularly in Sydney, between various lockdowns, where we were meeting back at church again, but because of government regulations, which I think let me say, I think were really important for us to actually submit to at that point, because people's lives were at stake. Those regulations, long and short of it, was required me to basically sit by myself for months and months in church with, the pew in front of me roped off, the pew behind me roped off, no one around me, while all the time watching families kind of walk in and sit together in their own little pews. And I did spend a number of months in church every Sunday, either crying or trying not to cry, at just how alone I felt. And I think as I reflect back now, I realize how deeply that impacted me, not just in the moment of COVID and that kind of isolation we all felt, but that church is the place where we should feel the least alone. And it was where I was actually feeling the most alone at that time. And it just hit me. Church should never be a place where any of us feel alone. And for me, that kind of where I sit has kind of become the tangible barometer, I guess, for my own sense of, am I feeling connected, embedded in deep relationships with the people in this place?
Yes, I want to ask a lot of follow-up questions to that, if I may,
Yeah.
please. I'm trying to articulate the question, and I've rewritten it, and I can't quite get it right, I think, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is where we sit important in some churches? I mean, do some churches have an unofficial seating plan, if I can put it like that? And if so,
Oh,
why?
absolutely. Absolutely. And this is going to be different for not even just different churches, but different people in different churches. So I'm not sure I've ever heard of a church that's kind of got a right, this is where everybody sits and you'll stick to this plan, thankfully. But there's a kind of just an informal thing where most people in churches kind of tend to sit in the same place. And then there are, particularly maybe in some of the older churches, which do have kind of pews, and there are even kind of family pews. This is where we sit. And so, whether it's kind of more of a recognized thing or just really more of an informal, embedded thing, I think many of us walk into church each week and just gravitate, A, to sitting with the same people, which is normally for the vast majority of people, their husbands and their wives and their children, if the kids start in church, and be sitting in the same place in church. Lots of people will, we've got a joke in kind of Anglican circles that you're in an Anglican church if the front two rows are empty, because no one sits in the front two rows in an Anglican church.
It's true, except the vicar.
Yeah, that's right. And his wife probably.
Yeah.
So, there's practices that are funny and particular, but there's also people who will automatically feel like I need to sit at the back of church. That says
That's
something.
me.
The fact that we don't sit, yeah, I do too. I'm trying not to as much. It was much easier to do that when I was in a long kind of old church where there were, lots of rows. It was easier to hide at the back in that sense. So I think I just don't think it's something we've thought much about, that where we sit actually is significant and does say significant things. It's just part of the normal practices of church going that we don't really identify, I don't think.
Yes, I once got a cushion thrown at me in church, and I was working in the church at the time. And I turned around and said, "What's that all about?" And the person said, "You're sitting in my pew." And I said, "Has it got your name on it, brother? You know, I can't see your name on it anywhere." I said, "I got here first. Do you mind?"
Yeah,
I mean,
I hear
it was real
stories like
enough.
that
It
in
was
prison.
a bit of a
I
shocking
know.
experience at the time. I just brushed it off. I thought it was funny. I can laugh about it, but at the time, it was just deeply weird. Is this a problem? Is this a problem that single people face when going to a new church, or is this still a problem even in churches that they or we have been attending for a while?
Well, again, I don't want to be prescriptive and say this is true of all singles or even the majority of singles in churches. I don't know, but it's certainly true of enough that I have felt it, but others like you're telling stories similar, that there are enough single people in churches who feel this, that I think it is something that they not uniquely or exclusively experience, but do significantly experience. And the other group that I should also say, and I've heard a few people have contacted me about this since the article went out, it's not just those who are single, it's anyone who comes to church alone. And so another demographic group there is Christians who are married to non-Christians whose spouse does not come to church with them. They, even if they've got kids that they're bringing, they are coming alone as well. Or I have a friend whose husband is in ministry outside of a church context, which actually requires him to be elsewhere, being involved in like a chaplaincy thing on a Sunday morning. She and her children were actually attending church alone, even though her husband's, you know, in ministry, is very much a Christian. Her experience of church was a bit more like mine than her married friends at that point. So yeah, it's not just single people. I think it's really anyone who kind of who experiences or participates within the Christian community as someone who is solo in that sense.
Yeah, okay. Well, then we need to ask the next question. Why do solo people, if I can call them that or ask that, why do solo people have this problem in churches? What's going on?
Oh, gosh. How long is a piece of string?
We ask the easy questions on the show. I mean, yeah.
Well, I mean, we rightly joke about it, but this isn't just a question of seating. It's a question of how do we actually think about the different situations of people in the family of God. And, you know, I guess I could encourage people to go back and listen to our episode from last year, because, you know, I'm sure we delved into a lot of the questions there of, well, what do we think about being single as a Christian?
Yep, we should.
And therefore, how does that translate into what does it actually mean for us to be members of the family of God together? So at the fundamental level, I think the answer to your question is it's all about actually how we think about being, well, it's not all about, there's a lot of it is about how we think about being either single or married in church. And then that expresses itself in things like what illustrations are used from up the front, what language is used from up the front, where do people sit? How does actually the fact that families nearly always sit together, what does that say about how we're thinking about the nature of family as a whole at that time in that place? So, and also, what does it say about how we're welcoming not just single people, but newcomers into our family? Newcomers are people who normally, even if they're not attending solo, almost always sit by themselves alone. Until such a point where they're welcomed in enough that they feel like someone can come and sit next to them.
I had a friend of mine who was in a big church in London, and he was an Italian gentleman, and he used to sit on his own, but he would sing, and as Italians do, they just burst into song, and the vicar's warden came up and tapped him on the shoulder. So he told me and said, "Would you mind not singing so loudly? This is an English church." And he turned to her and he said to her, "My dear lady," in his wonderful Italian accent, "My dear lady, I am an Italian. We Italians, we love to sing. Don't interrupt me when I'm singing to my God."
Goodness me. Please stop being quite so exuberant in your worship of God. It's making the rest of us all a little uncomfortable. Wow. Yeah. I just want to add one thing as we're talking about this, and we may come back to it later, but let me just say up front, as much as I think this is an experience that a lot of single people struggle with, I don't want to in any way suggest, therefore, everybody else needs to solve this for us. Perhaps we can talk about, all right, what do we do about this a bit later on? But I do want to say early on, or at least at this point, actually, we have responsibility for this too. We are not kind of victims in this situation. We actually are members of the family of God. And so the responsibility is as much as on us as other people to kind of move forward in whatever this situation is.
Yes, I was going to ask you, I know some of the ways I've tried to solve it are quite radical, actually, and I'm happy to share one or two of those.
Yeah,
anybody listening to this, anybody listening to this, is think, don't ever let this bloke siddle in my church. don't bring him. You know, what are some of the things churches can do, and indeed that we can do as solo people or single people to resolve this?
Well, do you know what I think the first thing is actually identifying it. So yeah. I want to encourage people, whether they're, you know, pastors or ministers working at the church, whether they're the everyday person sitting in the pew or the seat, I want to encourage you to look around over the next couple of weeks on a Sunday and just observe who's there, where they're sitting. Observe when people come and leave. You know, if you are struggling to sit alone in church, if this is kind of causing you some anxiety, then let me tell you, the people who are doing that, many of them are planning their exact arrival time at church to the point where they feel like they can walk in without being really conspicuous, but where there's enough people around that they might be able to find someone. Like, just even that, observing that can be an indication. Look at who is leaving straight away and ask yourself, why are they leaving as soon as church is over? You know, one thing that I've observed starting at a new church, and again, I'm loving my new church. This is not in any way a critique on my new church or my previous church at all. But in my new church, one of the things that happens almost, well, immediately after the service finishes is that all the parents know that they need to go and rescue the kids program leaders from their little ones, and they're encouraged to do that, rightly so. And so they immediately get up and leave. You know, so a large number of the people, if I'm sitting next to someone, almost invariably they will need to get up and leave straight after church. That kind of leaves me going, okay, now I've got to find someone else to talk to. It's just observing things of how is this operating in our place, in our family. I think that's the first thing to do, so that you can actually then think, all right, what changes can we think about here? What steps can we take forward?
How do welcomers work for you if you're going into a new church and you have the lovely people that come? I had it recently last year, going to a new church a few times, and there was a lovely lady who was obviously the official or unofficial welcoming person, and she came around and chatted to me for quite some time, and it was very nice. And then she left, and I was sitting on my own again.
And look, you know, I've led been a num been on and led many kind of welcoming teams in church. I think welcoming is so important and so significant. But if we think of welcoming as we stand at the door and hand out the Bibles or the outlines or get people to put name tags on and then kind of send them through the door, it may be welcoming, but it's not hospitality. Let's put it that way. So yeah, welcoming actually has to go beyond just the door. And so, you know, you had an example of that where this woman came up and spoke to you. I think that's a wonderful next step to be able to take. An even better one after that is, hey, can I introduce you to this person? And kind of, you know, it sounds a bit officious, but kind of hand you over to somebody else so that, again, you're just not left there at the mercy of, I hope someone's going to come up and talk to me. You know, and so I think actually, yeah, welcoming goes beyond sort of just greeting, let's say. It actually is about hospitality and about helping people make connections.
Yes, I wish Rito was with us, because Rito and Mrs. Rito, Erin, they do a brilliant job of this at King's Grace. And when I was going to King's Grace more frequently than I can manage now, I was with my then fiance, subsequently broken up with her, but which is sad, very sad. But they were very good, and then someone would always come up and sit with us and chat with us before and after the service, and we were never left on our own. So I would have loved Rito to have been here to offer his wisdom on the subject, because I think he does it really well.
Yeah, that's wonderful to hear.
What about church leadership? What can church leaders do? Do we need to ask people to leave their family huddle and go and sit near or chat to a single person? How do we do this?
Yes and no. You know, again, I want to say all of this comes back to how do we actually think about who we are? And if the church leadership are actually helping their congregation members to recognize that, you know, church is not just a gathering of family units or households, but a household, the household of God, the family, you know, of sons and daughters of the kingdom, then that actually will have implications for all sorts of things, including how we think about just our movements, you know, in church, who we sit with, who we talk to. And so, you know, I think, yes, a church leader could get up the front of church and say, hey, everyone, I want you to stand up and go and sit next to someone you don't know. And everyone is going to feel incredibly awkward about that, including the person who's sitting alone. That's not the solution here. The solution is actually, how do we as the gathered people of God, reflect who we are to each other in ongoing ways. And that takes time of actually convincing and persuading people about this, but they can model it themselves, by actually not necessarily always sitting with their family. And again, let me say here, there are times when families really do need to sit together, particularly if, there's two adults and more than two small children. We get it. I'm not wanting to be prescriptive and say families must never sit together. But if families only ever sit together, and all families over only ever sit together, I think we need to ask some questions. A friend of mine who's a brilliant author and speaker, many of your listeners have probably heard of her, Rebecca McLaughlin. She's got a line that she uses that, a person sitting alone in church is an emergency. And she means by that they shouldn't have to sit alone. And so she and her husband quite often don't sit together. And in fact, their kids often just automatically go and sit with other families on a Sunday, because they recognize that at that place, when they gather together as the people of God, they want to, reflect the fact that they are one big family. I think that's brilliant. She's got
That
a
sounds
great
brilliant.
article that I've linked to from mine, so you can go and read that.
Right. Daniel, we've got about 4 or 5 minutes left. Final question. Let's solve the morning tea saga. The morning. What do you do about morning tea and about attending morning tea and being stuck, as I have been, in a morning tea room with people rushing to and fro and saying, "Excuse me, please, excuse me, please," and you're left standing there. What are we going to do about the morning tea saga, please?
Oh gosh, so much pressure to come up with the answers.
I don't know. I
Again, it's
haven't
such
solved
a,
it.
I know. I mean, I, yeah, if I'm standing alone after church by myself, whether it's my old church or my new church, it was much easier at my older church because I at least did know people that I could go, all right, now I can go and seek someone out. So this is probably even more pertinent for people who are new or new-ish at a church or visiting a church. It is very hard to go and make conversation with people you don't know, particularly when people are all gathered together in their little huddles in conversation with each other. And so we have to work out ways of seeking out the people who just don't automatically gravitate towards that group, so whether it's because they're new or they have been there a very long time and are feeling isolated. We have to just be looking out for people. We have to be loving people. We have to be re remembering that this morning tea time or supper time or whatever it is, it actually has a purpose beyond that we just do morning tea because that's what we do. It's actually about helping people build relationships in the church. And so if our occasion, morning tea, is not fit for purpose, that purpose, we actually need to be going, all right, what do we do to change this? And again, that's going to be very specific to different situations and different churches, I think.
Yes, my experience was in England. It's very difficult in England because there's a kind of unwritten cultural rule that you don't go and talk to people you don't know. The English tend to be very reserved. Sorry, English people, but you are. They would admit it themselves probably. And I was stuck in a morning tea room for a couple of weeks on my own with about 100 people, and no one talked to me, and I thought this is not going to work. And so I had a word with one of the church elders and said, "Well, what should I do about this? How can I be proactive about this? I'll make this my problem." Oh, he said, "Well, it seems to me that you're a perfectly affable sort of fellow, and why don't you go and talk to all the people who are on their own?" So I thought, that sounds like a neat idea. So the next Sunday, I made a beeline for all, and most of them were students from overseas who were at the church like I was. Newbies, new people who just come from Africa or the Middle East or somewhere, and I ended up having some absolutely
That's
fantastic
wonderful.
conversations with these students, mainly students from overseas, who we were then able to. I could then say, "Well, we've got a walking group. Would you like to come on the walking group? We'll take you down the canal in Manchester or wherever." And it was great. So, yeah, I
And
don't
that's, I
know.
think, that goes back to what I wanted, was wanting to say before, all those who feel alone in us taking responsibility and initiative, rather than just expecting that of other people. And I think what you described there was an absolutely brilliant example of that.
I don't know about that. I was just so fed up with it. I've got to say, it's horrible. We've laughed about this, you and I, and there is a, but it's not funny. Actually, it's not funny.
No, it's not. It's painful. It can be very painful.
It is very painful.
Yeah.
And it's very awkward, and it creates anxiety. And I mean, this is why I wanted to have you on the show to talk about it. So anyway, let's hope that we have at least started some kind of dialogue about this. Daniel Trowick, Founding Director of the Single Minded Ministry. Before we go, tell us about your new, you're involved in a new activity, commentary writing.
Oh, yes, I've just started. I've been contracted to write a commentary on 1 and 2 Thessalonians for the Hotter Bible Commentary series, which has just been released. The first four volumes are being released in the next couple of months. So, yeah, I'm immersing myself into 1 and 2 Thessalonians. Haven't quite got to the text yet. I'm still doing the background of it in lots of ways, and reading Acts 17 and working out what's going on there. So it's been really exciting, actually. I'm getting to know the Thessalonian Christians before I dive into Paul's letters to them in great detail.
Yes, and you've been planning your itinerary and your trip around the Roman Empire. I see on Twitter the other day you sent us out this. It's fabulous. If you haven't seen this, go and look at Danny's tweets, because she's got a journey map planner, isn't it? And you can work out how long it took to get from A to B or wherever in the Roman Empire in the first century. Yeah. It was absolutely fascinating.
I was trying to work out how long it would have taken from Paul and Silas and Timothy to have travelled, probably by foot, from Philippi to Thessalonica. And it was a great little tour. Mm.
The Roman mail service is also fascinating, much faster than you'd think it was. And I joked once with somebody I was interviewing that during COVID that actually the Roman mail service would have been faster than our mail service was during COVID, which it was, I think.
Yeah. Probably anyway, a few more people died in the process, but yeah, sure.
probably so, yeah. Anyway, Daniel, thank you so much for your time. It's been wonderful. And thanks to our creative team at Liquid Edge, who sponsor our podcast and who take care of things behind the scenes. Danny, bless you.
Thanks for listening to the God Story podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to leave a review and make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss the next one. Links to the books and topics mentioned in this episode can be found in the show notes, and you can discover bonus episodes on our Patreon page. As always, you can get in touch via our website, godstorypodcast.com. That's godstorypodcast.com.